EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There's 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There's 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's American 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs? They're out there. Taking airplanes.
And it is back.
Okay.
Bob, I swear to God, four calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty. Four calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello and welcome to the show, everyone, wherever in the world you are listening from tonight. This episode, we are joined by Nancy Tremaine from Detroit, Michigan, and she will be sharing a daylight encounter from 1961 that was witnessed by herself, neighbors, and police officers in the town of Novi. Nancy is also the author of two books, Symbiosis and Preordained, about that day and the events that followed.
But first, if you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles Podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show. Today, we are welcoming Nancy Tremaine to the show. Welcome to the show, Nancy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Nancy, it is wonderful to have you with us tonight. All the way from Michigan?
Yes, just outside Detroit.
Lovely. And that is where your lifelong experiences started back in 1961?
Not in Detroit. It started in Novi, where I grew up, outside of Detroit. It's a little country. It was all country and village back then. Trees and woods, farms. It wasn't built up back then when we moved there. I was 7 years old when we moved to Novi. So
that's great. Would you like to let the audience know who you are, Nancy, and start back in 1961 for us, please?
Well, I was born in 1949, and I'm the middle of five children. My father was a World War II combat soldier, so our house was run like a boot camp. Everything was regimented, routine. He worked as a hydraulic engineer in the aerospace division of Vickers. My relationship with my mother was very strained. Mom and Dad were married for nearly 60 years. And like I said, we moved to Novi when I was around 6-7 years old. And it was a village. It was rural. And I finally got a new friend when I was 9 years old. Cindy moved to Novi, which was close to my house. So my dad allowed me to go and play with her because he could watch me. From our front door, he had a view of her front door. But I was never allowed out past 7:30. I was 12 years old. It was summer. It was July. I have it narrowed down to a three-day period, actually. Cindy and I spent a lot of time playing with each other. And then a UFO decided to make a visit to Novi in the summer of 1961. And that event would haunt and traumatize us. And it became a secret that we were actually forced to keep. Not just us, but several members of NOVA, including police. It was 50 years and 2 months exactly before I spoke about it the first time. And that 50 years, Cindy and I did what we had to do to survive. She had several suicide attempts. She was a hardcore alcoholic, addicted to pain pills. I suffered with post-traumatic stress disorder, panic attacks, men, too many to name. Anyway, my dad got home from work every night, like clockwork, at 6:05, and I was allowed to go to play with Cindy. It was a beautiful summer evening, and it didn't get dark till 9 o'clock, so I don't know why, but we decided to play inside her house that night. And her father yelled for us to come outside. He just said, "Girls, girls." And as we walked out her front door, our reality was changed forever. It was like a movie. We were met by what at the time I call a flying saucer. It was hovering over a tree in between our two homes, just slightly above the tree. It was beautiful. I wasn't afraid at that time. It was so beautiful. And it was silent, totally silent. And there was a belt of lights right around the middle of it, of the saucer. And they were rotating or pulsating. They were going so fast, you couldn't tell. But they were red, green, white, red, green, white. And Cindy's father was adjusting a small tripod telescope. And he asked us if we wanted to look through it. And I wondered why. It seemed silly. The ship was right in front of us. I mean, literally right in front of us. And a police car came down the road, and it turned into the subdivision that was developing where we were standing with Cindy and her father and a neighbor man at that point. And the police car coasted to a stop, and the two officers got up, and they walked backwards up the incline so that they could be standing with all of us. And they never said a word. And I grabbed the one police officer's arm, and I said, I tried to say three simple words. But when you're traumatized, it was so hard. It was all I could do to get those words out. I said, "Is this real?" And he never answered. I just had to know that this was really real, what I was seeing. And I kept saying to the ship in my head, "Don't go anywhere. You got to stay there. I want everybody to see you." I was really excited about it at that point until a car started coming down Meadowbrook Road. And that's the road that my house is on. And it was heading towards us. And it was heading right underneath the tree. And I know we were all wondering who would be crazy enough to be coming closer and closer to this ship. And then a beam of light came out the bottom left-hand side of the ship, and it was really slow. It just started working its way down to the hood of the car. And we were all wondering what is going to happen when that beam of light hits the car, because it was aimed right at the car. And it hit the car, and the car was immobilized. And I started jumping up and down at this point. I don't know. I was yelling, "Over here, over here." And Cindy's grabbing my arms, and she's telling me to stop. And the ship spoke to me. It said, "We see you." So I understood that it was alive. And that's when I became hysterical. And I grabbed the police officer's arm, and I said, "Do something." And he looked down at me, just a glance. But it was the very first time that I'd ever seen fear in a man's face. That look on his face changed something in me. And that was the last memory I had. That was it. I was home, and my dad was kneeling on the kitchen floor, and he was hugging me, and he was telling me I was home and I was safe. And I looked at the clock on the stove, and it said 10 minutes to 9. 10 minutes to 9. I was never allowed out past 7:30. My dad spanked us a lot. But he was just so happy to have me home. And I asked him if I could call. And he said, "Okay." And she got off work at 9. And I just remember telling her what I had seen. And she said, "I know, honey. A lot of the customers saw it." She said, "I'll be home in a few minutes." Well, she got home at 10 after 9. after that, my dad, before Mom got home, my dad silenced me. He shook me, and he said, "You are never to speak about this again. Do you understand me?" I knew he meant it, but I didn't understand why. And it was like I was almost programmed never to speak of it again. But I do remember clearly that night, standing on the headboard of my bed, looking out of my bedroom window so that I could see the tree where that ship had hovered. And I would say over and over again, "Please come back and get me." I did that many nights. You know, why would I say, "Please come back and get me"? I mean, I had no memory of anything other than seeing it. So for the 50 years from 1961 until September of 2011, I would get this burning to my nose, and I knew that it was attached to memories. I didn't know it had anything to do with that event. But this burning sensation would come to my nose, and I would go to several therapists, and I would say, hypnotize me, because there's something inside me that has to come out. But they didn't believe in hypnosis, or, you know, insurance didn't cover it. And I would be diagnosed with one thing after another and given different medications. And I had this intense fear of doctors. So September 1st, 2011, I'm playing on the computer. And you have to understand that I don't know anything about the computer except Google. And I found the word ufologist. I'd never heard it. I didn't know there was such a thing as somebody who actually researched this stuff. So I sent him an email, and I said, "I might have a story you'd be interested in hearing." Well, he called me right away, and he asked me to tell him. And I said, "I can't do that. I haven't talked about it for 50 years. And the next thing I know, I was telling him everything. And he asked me a bunch of questions. I guess he realized that there had been missing time. See, I hadn't even put that together. I'd never heard of missing time. But it was 10 to 9 when I got home, and it was almost dark. And I had no information about where I was or what I had done. Anyway, he was a state director for Michigan, MUFON. We met a couple days later, and he asked me if I could draw a picture of what I saw. And I said, "Are you kidding? I draw it every year or so, and I throw it away. So, you know, I do it for my sanity." So I drew a picture of the ship and the tree and me and Cindy and the police and the car coming down the road and the beam hitting it. He was quite impressed. So he decided to, I told him how much I wanted to know about everything and why I just remembered being home. He found a regression therapist who had done over 100 regressions, but never with an experiencer. When I met him, I had drawn 3 illustrations, and we decided to set up a regression. And in the meantime, at the end of the first regression, I knew there was much more, because I was frozen. I couldn't move my arms and legs, and I was so mad. I fought to move my arms and legs, and I couldn't. And the next thing I knew, I was on my back, and I was in some kind of an energy wave, and it felt beautiful. And I knew I was going up into the ship. I knew I was. And I kept saying, "My body is waving and rumbling to the low hum of the ship." And I wasn't afraid. And then the regression therapist brought me out of the regression. And boy, that just left me. I sat up and I said, "It's real. It's really, really real." They encouraged me to find Cindy, the little girl my girlfriend who was with me that day. And I had my 3 illustrations, and Cindy was hardcore alcoholic at the time. I went over to her house. When I got there, I was really serious. I was armed with my illustrations, and I ordered her into the bedroom, and I told her to sit on the bed, and because she was going to talk. She was going to talk. We were going to acknowledge this. And I pulled out the first illustration, and she was terrified. "What are you doing?" she said. I said, Cindy, this is important. This is important. And then all of a sudden, it was like a light bulb went off in her head. And she said, I remember this like it was yesterday. You were gone. We couldn't find you. I think my dad went down to your dad, or my dad called your dad. I couldn't believe it. She was telling me I was gone. I was missing. Then Cindy and I started sharing phone calls, and we would talk. Oh, well, I forgot. We called her husband to come out of the bedroom. He was in the other bedroom watching TV. And we told him about that night in 61. And he believed us. He believed everything we said. But Cindy still hadn't remembered. She'd only remembered me. For some reason, she'd not remembered her memories of being on board. She remembered, finally, that she was in a cylindrical tube. And I had drawn an illustration of that, of her in the cylindrical tube. I said it was a holding cell. That's how I saw it, as they had put her in this holding cell. Because when they were getting me, which I remembered through the second regression, I was running home. That's how they got me. And they got me with some kind of an electrical shock in my back, and I knew they were going to. I knew exactly how they were going to get me. I was hauling ass. I was running home, and I kept saying, don't get me, don't get me. And when that shock hit me, I was frozen in running position, just like a cartoon character, if you've ever seen them, frozen, arms and legs. And that's why in my first regression, I couldn't move my arms and legs. That's what happened. And then I was going up into the ship on my back. Cindy remembered watching the beings doing something to my stomach. And she also talked about a military investigation, which was so far over my head, I couldn't even think about that. In fact, she mentioned that a couple of times over the years we started talking on the phone about, and I would record our phone calls from 2011 until 2015. And I had 5 regressions, but after that 3rd regression, I really didn't need any more. It was like Pandora's box had opened. And Cindy, her memories, some of her memories were so much clearer than mine. And in 2015, Cindy was found dead on her kitchen floor. She'd laid there for 3 days before they found her body. Her husband had died just a few months before. And after her death, which was really traumatic for me because she was all I had besides the former police chief to share information with, I was hysterical. I was taking a walk behind my apartment complex. There's a park. And I was swearing at her, Cindy, God damn you. You drank yourself to death. I'm all alone. I don't have anyone. And she spoke to me. She mentioned that those men, they came to your house. They wanted to talk to you. Your father threatened to kill them. That's when memories started coming to me, just bits and pieces. So I was already having conversations with the former police chief, Lee Begall, and I asked him about a military investigation, and he said, you knew that. He said they came in from Arizona or New Mexico. They came in prepared to disbelieve everybody because things like that don't happen. He said they wanted to talk to everybody. He said he thought my dad made a mistake in not letting me talk to them. I had to remind him that I was only 12 years old. They must have scared the hell out of everybody to foster such silence, to warrant such silence for 50 years. I mean, they went door to door. I know what they were doing. They were looking for pictures. That ship hovered for over 20 minutes against a clear blue sky. And you can't tell me that people weren't taking pictures. That my dad was sent to California shortly after that. He never went away on a business trip ever in his life. That was the only one he ever went. And he was offered a job position in Australia. Of course, he didn't take it. Well, during those years, I scoured the Novi, Michigan Library archives I mean, I went through those archives day by day, so I narrowed it down, that event down to a 3-day period. I struck gold when I found an article that was in the Novi News advertising the church sermon that was going to that was going to be that following Sunday after that event. And it was titled The Martian Question. And the minister, there was even a picture of a silly looking picture. I've got it in my book. I screenshotted. And it was the only thing that the people of Novi, Michigan got. It was the only comfort that was given to us, was the minister giving a sermon to the people of Novi who had been silenced. My parents took me to stay with strangers after that event. It seems like I'm jumping all over the place, but the memories keep coming back to me as I'm talking. My mom took me to stay with these strangers, and I remembered their last name, and I remembered they had three boys. And I didn't know why she would do that, and I thought that that was just something I had just imagined. But just a couple years ago, I talked to my cousin, and I told her the last name, Sheehy, and she said, well, those were Grandma's, friends of Grandma's, my dad's mother. And I said, wow, so they really did exist. After that third regression, jumping again.
We'll be back with Nancy after Strange World by Sugar Parks.
Everybody else, no, I'm not lying.
That was Sugar Parks with Strange World. Links to her music below in the show notes and on our website.
I started receiving messages and downloads and more illustrations to draw and visions and missing time and the fine-tuning of my pineal gland and a baby. Some of the very first messages, I kept saying, "Who are you? Who are you?" And it seems like I always get an answer, maybe not when I want. And I was told, quote, "You ask who we are. You have only to look in the mirror. We are you. We are all one." And I was told that our messages are not for everyone. Many will be left behind. And I was told that my mission is not to convince, it is just to inform. Since 2015, Cindy's death, until now, the high strangeness has just continued. It's like I've tapped into something. I've experienced samadhi, and I've become such an empath that I can't separate myself from the emotions of other people. I've had to learn how to reassess everything that I ever believed to be true and question my place in this world that's turned upside down. Writing my first book was really... Everybody kept saying, write a book. I didn't want to write a book, but it really helped me. It made it real. And it seems like all these people are being put in my path at exactly the right time. One of the illustrations that I was given to draw, I didn't understand what I was drawing. But when I finished drawing it, it was a reptilian. And I was told to write underneath the picture, "See me as I am." And I understood that that reptilian was the pilot of the ship in 1961. During my regression, after my third regression, when all the memories, Pandora's box and all the memories came forth, I remembered everything that happened on that ship. I remembered everything. I was on the ship and I ran right past the pilot. I was so excited. And I stood in the middle of this open floor and I said, "I can't believe I'm on a flying saucer." And the pilot said, "It's a ship." And I could feel his humor. I could feel his emotions. And I had to stand on my tiptoes because I was so tiny to look out the windows. And as I looked out the windows, I realized that they were the red, green, and white flashing lights that I saw from the outside. I was inside. And I had a clear view and I could see Cindy's father in the telescope. And I could see the tree. We were hovering right above the tree. I could see the top of the tree. The police were gone. Cindy was gone. The neighbors were gone. The only one there was Cindy's father, and he was looking up at the ship. And I remember I put my hands on the, I don't know if you want to call it glass, and I said, "I'm up here, Mr. Lutz." And then I started remembering that had happened on the ship, being taken to this table and a needle. And I've drawn pictures of it. And the beings, they were the small grays. And I was fighting them so hard, really a spunky kid, screaming and yelling. "I want to go home. I want my dad." But I saw Cindy. I could see her up in that holding cell right above me. And it was really comforting to see her. And they said to me, "We're going to do what we're going to do." And they weren't being mean. They had a job to do. And I understood that. They said, "We're going to do what we're going to do, and you'll get home safely." And I watched that needle go in my stomach. And it was excruciating. And then I remember... The nice one, I call her the nice one. She was the only female on board. She looked more human than the others. She was somewhere between a gray and a, I don't know what, but she had human eyes, and she was very loving, and she babied me, and she helped me get dressed, and she walked me back to the pilot, and I was so mad at him. I said, "Mister," and that's how he got his name, Mister, "why did you let them hurt me?" And he said, "Your pain was perceived." And then I got really mad. He was telling me that I was just imagining my pain, but that wasn't what he was telling me. He said, "Your pain was perceived. We would never have hurt you. You have to find the positive. In every perception, there is a positive in everything." And even today, I still have to remember that message, because there is a positive, and no matter how terrible something may seem, there really is a positive in everything. So when I say I started getting messages and downloads, I get them from Mr., and that's MR period with respect, or from what I call the collective mind or the collective consciousness. Something happens once you have experienced it. I'm going to call it samadhi. I gave it a name. I didn't know what samadhi was. I gave it a name called slipping the loop. It's where all thought ceases activity and the mind is turned off and the physical world disappears with conception of space and time. The ego is dissolved. And after someone has entered samadhi more than once, and this is what has happened to me, some deep internal transformation takes place that annihilates all patterns of reality. When famed quantum physicist Werner Heisenberg, Nobel Prize winner, was dying, I'm going to use his quote. He said, "It is so very easy. I did not know this before. I see now physics is of no importance, that the world is an illusion." He then passed away peacefully. The high strangeness for me really started in 2017 in November. I'm a shut-in. I'm pretty much locked in my apartment. It's just me and my cat. I'd like to say I'm misanthropic, which means that intense dislike of humanity, but that is of humanity as a whole. I am capable of love, and I do love, and I do have wonderful friends that I've had forever. But as a whole, I'm not real thrilled with humanity. Most of my life is spent locked in my apartment writing. I woke up in 2017, and I always keep a notepad and pen on my coffee table, because I never know when I'm going to give a message, or sometimes I just call it a knowing. I just know something. I don't know how I know it. And there were words scribbled on my pad of paper. And when I read them, and I'm going to read them to you right now, I couldn't share them. For 12 days, I hung on to these words because I couldn't understand even what I'd written. Quote, "Realities or illusions are a part of the delusion we have created. We are living in a delusional illusion of our making. We are all players in this fictional theater we perform for our creators. A muse existing for our audience. The stage is set at birth, and our performance has begun," end quote. Next to the words was a circle. And inside the circle, I'd written all of these words, light, love, sound, consciousness, energy. And I somehow understood that this circle was the womb that gave birth to humanity. And outside this circle were three words in quotations, the what is. And it's only recently that I understand what the what is. The what is God. It's the only thing that is not physical or tangible. I know that sounds crazy, and I've never shared that in an interview before. In August of 2018, I was invited to speak at a Buddhist monastery. I knew nothing about Buddhism, and it was quite a long time, probably close to a year before I agreed to go. But I wrote to Soka-san, and I told him that I wanted to come in as an empty slate. I didn't want to know anything about it. And that's how I went. And they were the most beautiful, loving people. And I became obsessed with this. After I got home from the monastery, I did a little research, and I saw this, it's called the sunyata. It's a Buddhist symbol, and it means empty or void. And there's a small gap in that symbol. If you've ever seen this sunyata symbol, there's a little small gap, and I saw that gap as what I called how you could enter other dimensions or realms of reality. Yeah, the secret that my dad had shared with me, that came back to me after the third regression. What he had shared with me, he told me that there had been an alien that had been captured, and it was nicknamed Skinny Bob. Now, my dad was in the 5th Air Corps in World War II, and he spent 3 years in New Guinea and the Philippines and the Netherlands and the East Indies, and he was in over 100 air raids, and that was a time of the Foo Fighters. They were mysterious balls of light. I remember my dad told me about this Skinny Bob that had been captured, and he used the word captured, and I was 12 years old. I was so upset, and I told him that it was cruel that they had nicknamed him Skinny Bob. Anyway, I went to Google, and I just put the word Skinny Bob, and you can imagine when Skinny Bob popped up. Now, I'm not saying that that video is the Skinny Bob that my dad was talking about, but there it was. And I think my dad gave me that information and silenced me with it to validate what had happened, to let me know that I wasn't crazy, and that was important information. I also didn't describe the illustration that I had drawn of Mister, and a picture of that is in my first book. Mister, in physical form, is 7 to 8 feet tall, brownish green. He has a very thick, heavy tail that rests on the floor. Webbed feet, I call them alligator feet. 3 long clawed fingers. And when he looks at me, he looks through me. He exudes love and power and leadership. He is a very proud creature, and he is well respected by all species of beings. And I know that I belong to him, and we have a symbiotic relationship. Symbiosis is the title of the book, and that definition is a mutually beneficial relationship between two different species. And I realize that we've always been together. Now, I don't see him in that form. That's why he had me draw that picture. And that's why he appeared as a man on the ship, because he didn't want to frighten me. He looked just like anybody's father. But I do not see him in that form. I only saw him in that physical form of the reptilian one time, and that was when I was about 3 years old. I guess I could talk about that. I was with Mister, and we were not inside a ship. We were on some kind of a balcony. We walked to this ledge, and I realized how high up we were. And when I looked down, there was a cement tank, swimming pool, pond, whatever. It's rectangular. And I've drawn a picture of that also. And it's separated into 3 different sections. In each section was a different sea creature. And I was told that I had to, one looked like an eel, one had whiskers, frightening looking. They were all humongous. Everything was in black and white, like a black and white movie, except for the one creature on the right-hand side had a little bit of orange on it. And he told me that I had to swim. Now, remember, I'm 2-3 years old. I had to pick one of the sections, and I had to swim from one side to the other. And I was just so upset. I didn't know how to swim. And I said, I can't do that. I knew if I did, I'd be eaten. He said, you have to choose. So I finally chose the one on the right because it had orange color. I started to get really upset, and Mister could see my fear, and he said, Nancy, this is just a vision. It's nothing more than a vision. We needed to know which one you feared the least. You see, they're studying the emotions of fear, anxiety, rage, empathy. Things that need to be removed, like rage, hatred, and studying the emotion of fear and reincorporating empathy. And I spoke about this during a regression. This was recorded on my regression, and my regression therapist was very unsettled, and he said, "Nancy, do you understand on the deepest level what a brave little girl you are?" And I answered, "Yes, but this is how they learn.
Okay, Sugar Parks will take us up into the break now with her song, Dreamland.
I never knew who I was. I needed you to be enough. You saw a diamond in the rough. I found myself in your love. And now you're
I would like to say a little bit on the behalf of reptilians here. I think it's really important. A certain researcher who has, not even an experiencer, who has taken it upon himself to tell humanity that the reptilians eat babies, among other things. But since humanity began keeping records, legends of the reptilians and their participation with the creation of man has continued. Reptilians are teachers, scientists, geneticists. They are watching over our evolution. They are studying our emotions via the pineal gland, which is the place where all thoughts are formed. Their main concern is really empathy. A species cannot survive without empathy. You know, there is so little information regarding reptilians that is positive because researchers avoid it like the plague rather than risk being bullied or ridiculed. I want to tell you how many people are researchers who are also experiencers with reptilians and have had positive. Barbara Lamb, Erica Gage, Bridget Smith, and artist of the reptilians. You know, they date back 240,000 years, and they were thought of as gods by the ancients. And I'm going to give you two messages that they gave me. We can lead humans to the truth, but we can't make them think. But just like any species, they're all consciousness. No species, not even your beautiful blue-eyed blonde Nordics, are all good or all bad. Nobody's all good and all bad. There's a beautiful article written by Jordan Bush, Looking Past the Scales. And she says that despite what some perceive as unappealing exterior, reptilians care for their young, they communicate with one another, and they even play. I'm talking about crocodiles, alligators. Mother crocodiles and alligators carry their babies in their mouths gently. The babies ride on the mother's heads or snouts, and they guard their young for weeks. When the babies cry, the mothers respond. They did tests. They took the babies and moved them from the mothers. And all the babies had to do was cry, and the mothers came. They swim. They jump. They run. Their behavior is very intricate, much more than previously believed. They're actually smart, complex animals. And 70% of the females repeatedly mate with the same male. They stand by their man. So I just wanted to give you a little information on the reptilians. I think they've had a bad rap for too long. We've got to have open minds. My second book, Preordained, is far from just a UFO book. It supports what happens to so many hardcore experiencers that have gone past the fear and now become subjects of expanded states of consciousness, increased contact, and become part of a grand cosmic oneness. I'm a participant, a conduit, an antenna, an instrument, receiving these messages. This is what happens to all hardcore experiencers that are open. The more open you are, the more experiences you'll have. You know, Jacques Vallée stated that this phenomenon wants to get your attention. It wants to raise your consciousness. It wants to wake us up. And that's exactly what's happening right now. It is my belief that the past, the present, and the future are all one and the same. The pattern is the circle of life that just keeps repeating itself. I spoke about my belief that God is the what is, the only thing separate from anything that is physical or tangible. I was able to understand that when a quantum physicist in Mexico and I became friends, he reached out to me and he sent me the words of a Paul Brunton. I'd never heard of Paul Brunton, a British author of spiritual books and bestseller of a book called The Search in Secret India that was translated in over 20 languages. And his words not only validated what I'd written in that sleep state, that realities are illusions, but his words brought me to my knees. And I'm going to read a quote he wrote that's so similar matches what I had written in a sleep state. This is his quote. The world pattern is preordained in the sense that it is written out like a stage play. The author is God. Each of us has an allotted part to play. We have no free will to reject it and no free will to play another part. That is because he has resolved all that went before. He cannot help being what he is, and what he has to do on the stage follows logically from what he is. Everything has to happen the way it does. Every instant is preordained by the past as well as by the plan. Even the freedom of will to choose is only apparent, for the actual choice is itself preordained, end quote. It was so funny because this quantum physicist in Mexico was writing to me. Believe me, he's asking me questions, and I finally wrote to him and I said, you know, you were put in my path at exactly the time I needed you to validate what I'd written in a sleep state, because he wrote, "Your words are compatible," and that's when he introduced me to this author. And that's how my second book got its name, Preordained. I try to keep everything in order, you know, because I'm really anal about having everything in order, but I just went off. I have notes. Of course, if I didn't, I would lose my mind, because there are so many experiences and things happening. Even now, nothing has never stopped. It's just increased. So I have to keep a journal every single day of my life so that I have the dates and all the information exactly as it happened. And when I call them collecting souvenirs. Whenever I'm on board or whenever I have an experience, I collect souvenirs that I bring back with me, like tiny things that I remember, like the small gray using his right hand. I found humor in the fact that he was right-handed. You see, I take these little notes. And then another time when the gray whispered in my ear, I felt his breath, and I said to myself, he breathes air. So it's things like that that I try to collect the memories or souvenirs.
You're certainly right. I mean, reptilians do get a very bad rap. I think especially in movies as well, you know, they get very bad. They're always the very negative side of a new alien species.
Because we, you know, and that's why the blue-eyed, blonde Nordics are the good guys. And always the bad guys are the guys with the black hair. You see, I grew up with black hair, you know. And the black cats get put to sleep, the first ones to be put down. And anything ugly, like or what we consider ugly, like a reptilian, they have to be evil if they're ugly, if they look like that. We've got to open our minds and go so much. Beautiful people. I mean, I don't know if you ever heard of Doug Auld. He's an artist, and he did art on burn victims, severely burned, just the worst burns you can imagine. And the art is beautiful. These people are beautiful people, but they've been, you know, they've felt like lepers all their lives. Plastic surgery. I mean, everything is about the way we look. Everybody's got to be that perfect. Whatever perfect is.
The only thing on the outside is the weathered skin, isn't it? The scars and that. The scars of life.
The scars of life, internal and external.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. But, you know, that's what makes us.
Yes, it is. And I'm glad I went through all of those experiences because it made me who I am. And it gave me the strength to draw. I needed to go through all those experiences so that I had the strength to draw from all of that, to be able to explain and help other people to come forward. And no matter how crazy you think your experiences are, there are people like us we want you to come forward and share, because you're not going to believe how good you feel when you share and when somebody has an open mind and listens to you. I'm not asking you to believe everything that I say. My messages aren't for everyone. But for the people that get it, I'm here. I mean, feel free to email me, and I will get back to you. Because I know how hard it is. Like I said, 50 years, I held it inside.
Certainly, we'll add any contact details for Nancy in the show notes, and also on the website as well. But Symbiosis and Preordained, I think both very poignant names. Both available at Amazon.
Yes. I'd like to thank Philip Mantle for publishing Preordained and Sir Grant Cameron. He'll always be Sir Grant for me. He published Symbiosis. And to thank David Chase and Mark Randall for doing the artwork for the covers, trying to help get the word out.
That's what it's all about. Anyone interested in obtaining Nancy's books, links are in the description below in the show notes.
Thank you.
That is wonderful. That's absolutely fascinating, Nancy.
Thank you for letting me share. I know I went in a bunch of different directions. And absolutely. That's I want them to come forward and share their stories. And we can validate each other. And And like the message is, you know, our messages aren't for everyone. Many will be left behind. That is exactly what they said. Many will be left behind. And when they said that, I thought that they didn't mean it literally. But guess what? They meant it literally. When we slip into this next dimension or whatever you want to call it, and I think we're kind of going through it right now, they won't be going with us. There's something taking place more than this coronavirus right now, something much deeper, much more profound. This is the new earth. This is a new world we're living in now. Humanity will never be the same.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like that. It doesn't feel like it will be. You know, things have changed. It's very similar to after 9/11 happened. You know, the world changed after
yes,
that.
Yes, it did. But this time it's going to change. We're going to be more robotic. There won't be the hugging and the handshaking and, you know, all of that. And everybody's already got their heads only in their computers and their phones. And like I said, empathy is being waned out of us. I think there's a lot of, like, to find the positive in what's going on right now. I'm just so glad. I'm so happy for the animals. Finally, they have their space that we've taken from them. And now this meat, I know it sounds horrible, but this is God's way of saying, and the planet's way of saying, stop eating all the animals and polluting all the air. Look at the air and the water. Everything's clearing up, everything. There's so much positive in what's going on right now. I know it's difficult for people. They don't want to be locked in their homes, but this is just a moment in time. This is a historical moment in time is all it is.
Yeah, hopefully we'll have a positive outcome.
Yeah, I think that'll be how we perceive the positive outcome.
I really appreciate you coming on today, Nancy. It has been wonderful having you on.
Thank you so much, Nick. You've been great. Just thank you for being there. Thank you for listening to me and putting up with me.
That is all we have time for today. If you're interested in learning more about Nancy's fascinating account, head to our website, ufochroniclespodcast.com, or hit the link below. And on the episode page, you will find photographs and a phone conversation with Police Chief Lee Begol that you can also listen to. I will be back next week with more witness encounters. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.